there's a problem, I can fix it. My name is Zoe, and I'm really, really optimistic. If there's a problem, I can fix it.
I love my family with all my heart.
Yo.
When I grow up, I want to be a punk rock. Yo, Lucia. When I grow up, I want to be a punk rock. Yo, Lucia. When I grow up, I want to be a punk rock. Yo, Lucia.
I'm smart. I'm cool, and I follow my own rules. I'm smart. And I'm cool, and I follow my own rules. I'm smart, and I'm cool, and I follow my own rules. I'm smart, and I'm cool, and I follow my own rules.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. The time is 6 o'clock.
Join KBOO and Kofallin Cultural Center on Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater for an evening of storytelling, live music, and film. Malian artist, author, and storyteller Baba Wage-Jakite starts with a talk on the background of the Empire of Mali and the role of West Africa's oral historians before the screening of Keita, Heritage of the Griots, a film which blends modern events with magical realism, mythology, and history. Again, that's an evening of the culture of Mali, including the screening of the film Keita, Heritage of the Griots, on Thursday, June 14th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is celebrating 50 years of broadcasting and the many people who are part of KBOO's history.
KBOO, I really think, is a good resource, and they give a voice to people who might be isolated or disfranchised. I thought that was good how they put it in the mission statement.
KBOO was a lot of activity, and I was struck by the diversity. It was very welcoming, and I thought, this is something I like to be involved with.
The day I walked in, it was during Pledge Drive, and I was immediately pulled over to the membership drive table, which was in the front lobby, and we were all talking on the air about why you should join KBOO, and it was fun.
To hear the stories of people who helped make KBOO what it is today, go to 50yearsofkboo.fm and click on KBOO Stories Project.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring an uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the capital city. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee. But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that that I will, but today I am still just a bill.
Welcome. In this show, we begin a three-part series on the Oregon Homeless Bill of Rights. In many of our shows, we discuss struggles that houseless people experience on a daily basis, including oppression, suppression, and discrimination. Some topics that will be discussed by some of the organizers of the bill include the right to shelter, public space, access, safety, and freedom from discrimination. Other topics are geared around law enforcement and harassment, courts, the right to privacy, property, and children. More importantly, the right to life-sustaining activities, basic services, the right to income, and to have the ability to obtain ID, a P.O. box, and to vote.
In 1787, I'm told our founding fathers did agree to write a list of principles for keeping people free.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. And today our segment is in Portland, Oregon, in Ground Zero, in the houseless community. And we're talking about the Homeless Bill of Rights. And today I'm here with...
Michael Moore.
Okay, Michael Moore, the Homeless Bill of Rights. Can you explain that to the listening audience?
Well, the first Homeless Bill of Rights was passed in Rhode Island, the state of Rhode Island, earlier this year. And it was a pretty simple bill, but pretty important because it protects the civil and constitutional rights of people who are unhoused. What they saw happening in Rhode Island and what we see happening here all the time is that people who are unhoused get targeted simply because they don't have a place to live. They get harassed by private security. They get harassed sometimes by the police when they're not doing anything wrong. They're simply trying to survive, trying to exist. And we don't think it's right that people should be penalized just for being alive because they have no shelter. They have no permanent shelter. We don't have adequate shelter space in Portland, so it's not as if there are alternatives for these people. There's no place to go. We have a few camps. Well, we have a camp. We have a rest area. We have some shelter space, but it's insufficient for the population.
We call it the Homeless Bill of Rights. What happened to the Bill of Rights and the Constitution? Doesn't that protect everyone?
It does, and it doesn't. It should apply to everyone, but you know, the Bill of Rights, as wonderful as it is, did not really envision the kind of problems that our society has today. It doesn't actually address. It doesn't give you a right to housing. We don't have that in this country, and it doesn't specifically say what should happen to people who don't have housing. And so as a result, the various municipalities around the state and around the country are passing these ordinances like camping bans and sit-lie type laws. Like here in Portland, we have the sidewalk management ordinance that penalize people just for trying to get some sleep or trying to get rest. And there's nothing in the Bill of Rights that specifically addresses that, which is why we feel that we really need some additional protections for people who are unhoused.
How did you feel when you was asked to come up with one for the state of Oregon?
I thought it was a great idea. We started talking about this in conjunction with our allies. I work at Sisters of the Road, and we're a part of an organization called ARAP, the Western Regional Advocacy Project. And there are a couple of other organizations in Portland that are also part of RAP, including Right to Survive, which I also participate in, and Street Roots. And we all talked about this. The organizer for RAP came up to Portland, and we were discussing what we would want to work on, what we could work on together, and this idea of a Homeless Bill of Rights came up. We looked at what Rhode Island had done, and we looked at what was going on around here, and it's very much the same as what's going on in Los Angeles and San Francisco and Santa Cruz and Sacramento, all of which RAP has member organizations in all of those cities. And we all agreed that, you know, this was something that we could collaborate on and work on together. So it was a great opportunity, not just to work on something that we really need, but it was also a great opportunity to work with some great allies and build stronger relationships across state lines and within this state.
How tedious, can I say that, have it been in conjunction wording, the proper avenues, organizing different people and groups to feed into this homeless bill of rights?
It's I don't know if I would call it tedious. It's really time consuming though, and really labor intensive, and you know, it's just challenging to get everybody together. And but we had some initial meetings between Sisters and Right to Survive especially, and we kind of worked out a structure that we feel pretty good about. It still probably needs some tweaking, but a structure to sort of build a campaign for this that involves, you know, a legislative subcommittee and a communications subcommittee and organizational outreach and probably most importantly street outreach, so that we can really begin talking to people on the streets about what this bill could do and probably about what it could not do. And you know, it's really important to all of us to get the voices and the needs of people who are currently unhoused addressed in this. And that's challenging. It takes time. It's not like, you know, I could sit down and write a bill myself in a couple of days, but that would be my bill, and it would be Michael's bill of rights. It wouldn't really be the homeless bill of rights.
The houseless advocates always cry out that the same law should affect everybody. If a businessman can come out and stand in front of an office or a building and talk, and people have to walk around them, what's the difference if a homeless person is standing there because they're tired? Do you think that this would cause separatism? We're trying to say we all equal, but do you think this homeless bill of rights would create some type of separatism where your set of rights is for the housed people and this set of rights is for the unhoused people?
You know, in actual fact, this, even though we are referring to this as a homeless bill of rights because it addresses issues that are specifically encountered by people who are unhoused, these rights would apply equally across the board to everybody. What I think a lot of people who've never experienced homelessness don't understand is that people who are experiencing that get targeted. So in theory, all the laws apply equally across the board, but in actual fact, they don't.
Do you think this would bring awareness to the house people on what's really happened to their brothers, their mothers, their sisters, nieces, nephews, uncles that's living in the street?
Yeah, I think that's one of our big goals here is education and getting people to understand more about the challenges. There's a lot of perception that people who are unhoused, there's a lot of misunderstanding about how people get in that situation in the first place, and then there's a lot of misperceptions about why they can't get out of it. And people think that if you just there's this kind of common belief that if you just follow the right rules or do the right things, everything will be fine. But that just isn't the case. It doesn't happen. And I think that this bill will be a vehicle for really kind of telling more of the truth about people on the street, why they're there, what happens to them while they're there, how they're trying to remedy their situations, and what barriers they face.
This is an off-the-wall question, I suppose, but Do you feel like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin when they did the Constitution for the United States?
Do I feel like they would what?
I mean, that's how you feel excited, or you making a new head wave of going to uncharted territory or unadventured land or something?
Well, unlike Thomas Jefferson, I don't own any slaves, so I don't know how much I have in common with him. I think in a lot of ways we are following in footsteps of civil rights movement and the gay rights movement, and about just understanding that we're all people and we all have needs, and we all maybe have different perspectives and different experiences, but we all deserve equal treatment under the law. And that you know, was a sort of a founding principle of this country. And, you know, we haven't lived up to it, obviously, over the years. I think we've made a lot of improvements in 200 plus years, but we're not completely there yet. And I think that while there's much more widespread acceptance today of the notion of understanding, anyway, of how people get targeted because of their race or their gender, or their sexual orientation, there's less understanding right now of how people get targeted because of their economic conditions.
This would have the city official, it would be certain laws that you force in the hand of the powers to be to treat people like people, no matter what social status they're in. And with this, how would you implement the Homeless Bill of Rights? I mean, would somebody say there's a Bill of Rights, or would they carry cards, or what?
I think one of the things that that we really have to, we haven't even, because we're still in the somewhat early stages. I think we've passed through the very beginning, but we're still kind of getting stuff together. One of the things we have not addressed yet is how are we going to monitor enforcement? If we say, if we got this passed, and of course it depends on what it will look like when it is passed, but if we got this passed, we also have to be vigilant about monitoring how it's actually enforced. I don't think that we have begun to figure that out yet, but I think that's the second part of the work. This doesn't just stop once we get a bill passed, and I'm confident we will. I don't know how long it will take, but I think we will succeed. But once we do succeed, we need to stick together, and that's why it's so important for us to use this campaign to build relationships across the state and really, you know, strengthen our understanding amongst people who are housed and people who are unhoused about what kinds of rights they have and what kind of treatment they could expect, so that we're able to actually make sure that this is enforced and that people's rights are respected.
Have the committee that's conducting the Homeless Bill of Rights, who have they reached out to for help? Is it just the houseless advocates, or
in so far it's been a lot of advocates? It's been some. Aside from the sort of communities that revolve around Right to Survive and Sisters of the Road and Right to Dream 2 and a little bit of Street Roots and Dignity Village as well, it's mainly been people who are already kind of engaged, and we're doing work on engaging more people who aren't really currently engaged. I mean, and that's another big part of the effort we want to undertake is really kind of get people's input and get their opinions and hopefully get them involved and get them to start thinking about, you know, I actually do have civil rights. I think another aspect of being unhoused that people who've never been there don't necessarily grasp is that you feel completely powerless. You feel like the system is stacked against you. You know, you're trying to find a quiet corner to curl up and go to sleep in, and somebody comes and kicks you at 3 a.m. and says, "Hey, you can't be here. You got to move." That doesn't exactly encourage civic engagement. You know, it doesn't encourage you to feel part of the society around you and feel kindly toward your neighbors and feel like people, you know, want to help you. And I think, you know, getting people, some people come to advocacy or activism through their own personal trials, and some people re-engage with society when their own personal stuff gets worked out. I mean, I feel like the two go hand in hand. And I feel like if people are so disengaged right now because they think nobody's doing anything, nobody cares about them, this is a way to show that people do care.
Do you think the city officials or the senator, the representative, or even the governor will take heed to this and say, this is good, let's pass?
I think that right now we're still working on a draft, so I think it kind of depends on what we try to put in there. And I think, you know, there's probably going to end up being some negotiating, and we're going to have to take a long, hard look at what is actually possible, and politically, I mean, and what's desirable. And, you know, I'm not anxious to make compromises, but we're going to have a good, thorough, honest conversation with a lot of people about what can we get versus what do we want to get, and how much are we willing to give up to get some certain needed protections in place. You know, we want to start out with the most ambitious thing that we think we can that we need, and so I think, you know, the reaction of officials is going to depend partly on what ends up being in there. I mean, I'm anxious, for example, to I would love to overturn the camping ban. I think that's incredibly unlikely right now, politically, and I think it's been pretty unlikely for, you know, the past decade or more, given the grip that organizations like the Portland Business Alliance have on the city politics. But if we could at least get the idea that people have a right, if there's no shelter space, there's no place for people to go, that they actually have a right, the shelters are full, then they have a right to sleep in the park. I mean, that would be a huge improvement. It wouldn't be a complete overturning of the camping ban, but it would prevent the police and private security from ticketing people or citing people or bothering people when there are no alternatives.
You think after the homeless bill of rights, it'll be a preamble saying we the homeless instead of we the people?
No, it'll just be a little bit more all the people. Rather than we the housed people have these rights.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom land.
Ibrahim Mubarak, Right to Survive Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And in today's segment, we're going into the houseless community on Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon. And our topic is the Homeless Bill of Rights. And today I'm here with an organizer with that committee, and her name is?
Caitlin Keitel.
Caitlin Keitel, how long have you been an organizer?
Oh, I am brand new. Yeah, I have just gotten involved with Sisters, so this is the Homeless Bill of Rights is my first project.
And are you aware of the
houseless community and its issues?
I'm learning more and more every day with the friends that I meet at Sisters, but it is a whole world of experience that is I'm having my eyes open to.
And why did you decide to do to be on this committee or this organization involving the Homeless Bill of Rights?
Well, I think more and more I'm realizing the illusion of separation that I was taught growing up, that we're all supposed to look out for ourselves. And the more I look around, the more I struggle with money, trying to make bills. I realized that we're all in this together, and there's so much to learn.
And why a separate Bill of Rights for homeless people? Doesn't the Bill of Rights affect the homeless people?
Well, as we were talking about today, I think that the Constitution, as much as we want to believe it protects all people in this country, there really are gaps in terms of what we consider people's rights and how law enforcement approaches those issues and the way that certain people are mistreated on a daily basis. And I think that having a concrete Bill of Rights and having a legal touchstone to go to will be a great first step in protecting people and following up on violations that happen every day.
I heard you say that the Constitution is for everybody, whether you live inside or on the street, and it's the law enforcement that it depends on them if they're going to practice that constitutional rights or the Bill of Rights?
I don't want to make law enforcement the only scapegoat here. I think that inequality is alive and well in many institutions in this country, and I think that the Constitution is meant to be protection, and it becomes more lip service because people aren't being protected the way that they should.
Now, the homeless people, they feel slighted, and it's a gap in between living inside and outside. Don't you think that a different Bill of Rights separate people more, or would you think it draw them in closer?
I think as long as people are being treated differently because of their housing status, we need to make an effort to make specific protections so that people's rights can't be abused.
And what do you hope to see happen with this Homeless Bill of Rights?
Well, I guess first, more cross-class alliance built out of this process so that people in the greater Portland area are aware of the abuses and aware of the need for this legislation. Then I hope that we can see some concrete changes in the rights that people have and the way that law enforcement carries out their jobs.
In doing this, different cities, states have their different laws. Do you think it's going to be more effective here in Portland or harder here in Oregon to get this Bill of Rights passed?
I don't know much about the way that this is being organized in other states. I'm still really new to the campaign and learning my way around it. So far, I have not been impressed with what I've heard from people who are unhoused right now. It sounds like as friendly as I would like to think Portland is, there's a lot of hostility even here, and that's I have heard that it's like that in many other places. So
a lot of people think because you live on the streets that you're a drug addict, a woman of the night, or you're a gangbanger or a dealer, or you did something extremely wrong. And now with the economic crisis, people losing their house to foreclosures, people don't have jobs, they rather live on the streets than go to shelters because they separate families and stuff. They think that people, the houseless people, don't have no common sense. Is this what you believe, why people are being so misused in the houseless community, because they looked at as undesirables?
I think there's so much fear built into our society, and we live in such a judgmental society. I know from my own experience that I had a lot of fear instilled in me to avoid people on the street, that there was a reason that we put a lot of emphasis on personal responsibility, and that we say that people get themselves in situations when really more and more I can see these structural issues that provide certain people with opportunities and deprive other people. The more we can get to the root causes of poverty and homelessness, address issues like mental illness and substance abuse without criminalizing those issues, then we can see the people and find the solutions.
How can you imagine how the homeless Bill of Rights would be effective? Like someone sleeping on the sidewalk and they covered up a security guard or police or even a shop owner, or say, hey, you can't sleep there. Would they have a little card and show them the rights written on it? Or would they have a number with that person calling, say, well, I don't have to do this. You call this number. And you know, how would you like to see that done?
Well, I would like to see law enforcement agents and legal representatives of our state being held accountable to know this legislation once, if and when it is passed. I also know that our education committee, as part of this campaign, is planning an event that will teach people to know their rights so that when there is interaction with the legal system, that people are more equipped to advocate for themselves and voice their rights.
Because now, as we notice, I usually tell people, we're not your grandfather's homeless people. We're the new generation, because people are educated that's living on the streets now. And even if they're not educated, people are surviving on the streets, so they need to be protected too. Do you feel like you're a pioneer or something like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin when they came up with the American Constitution or the Bill of Rights?
Oh, I hope not. I hope to never be compared. No, like I said, I mean, I'm here more than anything to build community. I want a community to be a part of, and I think that I have very, very small offerings, but would like to be supportive in any way that I can. And I continue to learn so much every day from people who are living outside right now, and I'm inspired by their strength and courage every day.
Does it frustrate you to know that when you went to school, they taught you your rights, and now that people living on the streets basically don't have no rights?
I think school is another one of those institutions that teaches us a lot of lies. And yeah, it's absolutely disheartening to know that our country prides itself on this exceptionalism and is plagued by injustice, and any small piece of this movement that I can be a part of, I would like to.
All right, thank you much, Caitlin, and we hope that the Homeless Bill of Rights is a success.
I am happy. I am happy. I have a dream.
I got a dream.
One day.
Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. And today we're in Portland, Oregon, in Ground Zero in the houseless community. And the topic of our radio show is the Homeless Bill of Rights. And today I'm here with
Adam Arms.
Okay. Adam Arms, how long have you been helping with the houseless community?
Well, in San Francisco, I went to law school, and I was working at the Coalition on Homelessness. And then after law school, I worked there as the staff attorney at the Coalition for a couple of years. And then I came to Portland, and then I've been trying to help out as much as I can with Sisters and Street Roots and Dignity Village since about 2001.
So you're familiar with the homeless issues and the way houseless people are treated, and even some unforced houseless situation.
Yes, I think I am, yeah.
Okay. Why the Homeless Bill of Rights?
Well, it's needed. I guess that's the main point. I think there are rights that Americans have, that every American has. I think for homeless folks, those rights are not respected by law enforcement. or by other powerful forces in the community. And also, another reason is that homeless folks' basic human rights need attention. You know, whereas if you live in a house, you have a living room, a bathroom, a kitchen, shelter, a place to sleep and rest where you, when you want to. If you're living on the street, you don't have a bathroom. You can't kick back in your living room and take a nap if you want to. If you're sick, disabled, and need to rest more often than other folks might, you can't just kick back in a chair in your living room for an hour or two. You got to sit on the sidewalk or you got to sit in the park. And I think that the way that the laws are being enforced in Portland and in other places, those basic human rights are just being ignored, and so people aren't able to take care of basic life necessities. So I think the Homeless Bill of Rights will help to, first of all, educate the general public who may not be aware of the homeless folks' situation. It may educate folks, but also I'm hoping that the Homeless Bill of Rights is going to affect positive change, you know, with the police department, with the bid district, security guards, and it will just help folks on the street live a humane life, which a lot of times they're prohibited from doing just by the way that powerful forces in the community have been acting towards them.
What's going on here is because of your social status, certain rights pertain to you.
Well, I think certain rights pertain to everybody, but they, rights are violated for homeless folks. I mean, folks, I think it's, you've got a right to sit in a public space. Everybody's got that right, as long as you're not breaking a reasonable law. But you see these supposedly neutral laws being enforced in an uneven-handed manner. And so, you've got somebody in a suit and tie wants to kick back and eat lunch on, sitting on the edge of the sidewalk or on a bench in the park. That human right is sort of appreciated, or at least it's just part of the normal everyday thing. But you have a homeless person or someone who looks homeless or poor doing the exact same thing. I think the social status is noted, and all of a sudden people have, perhaps law enforcement folks or other folks have, this negative reaction, and they want to push that person away so they don't have to see that person. So I think the rights of homeless folks have been eroded, and I'm hoping that the Homeless Bill of Rights can stop that.
Do you think that the Homeless Bill of Rights would cause more separatism in this country, meaning where those are your rights, now these are my rights? Instead of closing that gap, it would widen it?
That's a good question. I mean, I think some folks' reaction might be, well, why do homeless folks get special rights and I don't? I'm hardworking, I should, why do they get special rights? I think that's a reaction that unfortunately might happen, but I think what the Homeless Bill of Rights does is bring equality, not divisiveness. I don't think it creates, it does not put homeless people's rights above anyone else's. I think it brings them, it brings the rights to the same level. It's protecting basic human rights that folks who live in homes find it easy to enjoy, and those rights are not infringed upon. If you don't have a house and you're forced to live on the streets, those rights, like I said, have been eroded away. So I think the Homeless Bill of Rights is just bringing everybody together instead of bringing them apart. But I could see how folks would have that opposite reaction. That's why I'm hoping that part of the Homeless Bill of Rights campaign is to educate the general public who may not be aware of the problems that people face living on the streets.
When you first heard about this, what was your reaction?
The Rhode Island? Well, first of all, I was surprised and happy. I mean, it's something that's been talked about in the advocates community for a long time, but there was sort of a feeling like, well, I don't know how it's going to pass. It's not realistic. And then Rhode Island does it. And of course, there's, excitement and happiness. It's like, well, thank goodness somebody did it. And then there was a sense of hope, well, shoot, if they can do it, why can't we? And so California's firing up on it. Berkeley, the city of Berkeley, passed something that they're trying to push to the California legislature. I know folks in California through the RAP folks are working on a homeless bill of rights down there. Oregon's working on it. We got a bunch of different states interested, and it seems like when you connect with somebody, a homeless advocate or a homeless person from another state who knows about Rhode Island, they're like, us too. You know, us too. We want to do this too. So it's sort of kind of spreading like wildfire, which is great.
Do you think that this is catching on fast, and do you think that it would be different city by city, state by state, or would it be the same nationwide?
I think the general concepts would be the same, but I think the way it's put into words and enacted into law are going to be necessarily different, because each state's housing laws, criminal codes are a little bit different, and so the language of the laws that need to pass are going to have to be tailored specifically to each state or locality. So they'll be, while the big picture issues are, I think, will be pretty close, the language will be different in each of the laws.
Do you feel like a pioneer like Thomas Jefferson or George Washington or something when they worked on a Bill of Rights?
I feel like a rower on a boat full of the powerful rowers. I mean, I think that everybody involved with this, I mean, there's so many people in Portland, at least, and in Oregon, who are interested in this and pushing it along, that everybody, you know, is a piece of the puzzle. Everybody's a rower in that boat moving forward. So, but I do feel like where we're rowing is new territory. You know, it's like we're all rowing this boat together, going forward as strongly as we can. But where we're rowing is new, because this sort of thing really, to my knowledge, hasn't been pushed, at least this way, in the past.
Do you see any difficulties in this Bill of Rights being passed?
Yeah, I mean, there's always the general difficulties of passing laws, but I think this one will face some problems. I think there'll be some biases. Negative stereotypes are going to probably stand in the way a little bit. I think what you mentioned earlier about a possible reaction of people thinking, well, how come they get special rights? You know, I think education will solve some of those problems. There may be big business interests. Store owners may, you know, be given false information or have certain stereotypes or concerns about what this means for their business. But I do think that education will solve, or should solve, most of those problems. So I think the nuts and bolts of getting this law passed are important, of course, but education, I think, is really the most important thing, most important part of the process.
Thank you, Mike.
Everyone is crying out for peace, yes. None is crying out for justice. Everyone is crying out for peace, yes. None is crying out for justice. I don't.
This is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. In this segment, we're going into the houseless community on Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, talking to organizer about the Homeless Bill of Rights. And today we're here with
Lindsay Day.
Lindsay Day, have you ever been houseless?
I've never been houseless, but I've had unstable housing throughout my childhood and into my early adulthood. I grew up on a tiny, impoverished Indian reservation up near Bellingham, Washington. And, you know, the good news about that, the housing is substandard and there's not a lot of it, but there's a lot of family to take you in if you need it, which is a huge blessing.
So is it safe to say that you're aware or know about houselessness?
I think that, you know, I never want to speak as if I am intimately aware of what it's like to live on the streets. That is something I've never had to experience, and I give all the honor and the credit and really raise up my brothers and sisters and my dear friends and family who have had that experience, who are currently having that experience. I certainly know what it's like to be unsure about where I'm going to stay the night, where my kids are going to sleep, what that situation's going to look like, whether it's going to be cold, whether it's going to be safe. I think that fear, I am absolutely intimately aware of.
That fear, and that's the thing that's generate more in the houseless community, the fear of not getting enough sleep, the fear of getting citations for finding a place to sleep, the fear of no restroom, the fear of not becoming productive, the fear of being mistreated. So why the Homeless Bill of Rights? Why did you decide to be a part in organizing that?
I think for all the reasons you just listed, the idea that anyone anywhere should be worried about where they'll be able to use the restroom or if they'll be able to use the restroom, worried about losing their belongings, about whether they are even allowed to exist. I think that's one thing you see in Portland especially, is this real attack on houseless people and their right to be anywhere. That is directly in violation, not just of our civil rights, but also of our human rights. This country agreed many, many years ago in the 40s to ratify a set of human rights that was created by the United Nations, called the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and included in that is the right to housing, is the right to participate in society. And we're seeing every day in this city and cities around the country that right being violated. And, you know, I come from teachings and from a community that believes that we take care of one another and everyone has the right to be fed and housed and clothed and to be a part of the community. So I'm really passionate about that.
Or is that the reason why when this first came up, did you jump at it? Did you think about it? Did you say, how can I help, or would I be able to utilize my skills and knowledge?
Yeah, I mean, I think as an ally to the houseless community, that's how I view myself, as someone who has lived in extreme poverty also, and is still, I'm a low-income single mom. A lot of these issues impact me directly as well. But I, you know, hearing about Rhode Island passing a homeless bill of rights was just so exciting, the fact that that's even possible. That there are folks out there who are talking about that. There are people who say, yeah, you know what, it's not fair. It's not okay that people are cited and otherwise harassed or beaten or mistreated for just being alive in a system that allows for houselessness to exist at all. I think it's really inspiring, the work in Rhode Island, and I'm really excited about the energy here in Portland. Folks, just immediately when we heard about it, unhoused, formerly unhoused folks and allies all said, this is an amazing thing. We got to be a part of this. So I'm really excited to be able to, you know, support this work in any way I can with whatever knowledge I have or skills I have, and to learn alongside everyone else. I think we're all learning, especially about the legislative process and how to interact with city officials and state officials, and creating a bill of rights is a huge thing to do. So it's all very exciting work.
So this is not just engaging thing that you would be a part on helping some people, but also learning yourself on doing things. So this is a win-win situation for you personally. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I think in every situation, you know, I look to the folks that have experiences I've not had, or elders for me that, you know, are further along in their path in life. And I just, you know, I was raised with this value of looking and learning and understanding that, you know, we don't come into the world knowing everything, right? We come into this world with eyes and ears and brains and hearts that should be open to all that we can gain from what other folks have lived through and lived with. And then also doing what we can and providing what we can when we identify, oh, hey, I've got some skills in this area, or I've got some understanding here, or I've done some work here, to be able to support others. I mean, that's what it's all about, right? Coming together. To me, that's what community organizing is all about, is how do we all share the bits of skills and knowledge and abilities that we have to work together in order to achieve what for me is the ultimate goal, I think, for all of us, which is, it's not just about equality for unhoused versus housed folks, it's for a true change in the system that we have in this country that keeps those divisions and allows for people to live in extreme poverty, to live without housing and health care and all of those basic rights.
And speaking on those divisions, wouldn't the Bill of Rights per se in the Constitution, wouldn't that be enough to justify humanity in the homeless community? Do you think that it's needed, or do you think that people can rely on the Bill of Rights, period, per se?
Well, I think we're seeing every day, you know, we have these rights that are supposed to be in place, right? There's some, you know, on city levels, state level, federal levels, we have these rights we're supposed to be guaranteed and we're supposed to be able to rely on. And every day we see them violated. And I mean, idealistically, you know, or realistically, I should say, we would hope that those rights are enough, but clearly they're not. Because folks are all the time being harassed and jailed and ticketed for trying to access the basic necessities of survival, you know, sleep, food, shelter, all of those things. And you know, my hope would be, and what I think is really a big drive for folks who are part of this work around the Homeless Bill of Rights, is that it will be a vehicle for us to be able to talk more and more in communities that don't experience or aren't currently experiencing houselessness, to really be able to understand what that means, what it means for people who are houseless, these protections that we're asking for, extra protection, because it's not enough. The U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights is not enough to protect people. And that's a shame. That's a real shame.
So do you think this would create more separatism in this country? Well, we have the Bill of Rights, which protect people in the house. Now we got a homeless Bill of Rights. And do you think the gap is widening?
Well, you know, my hope would be that what will come of this is there will be more awareness. There will be more compassion. There will be more empathy. There will be more recognition of the systemic issues that are creating this division between houseless and housed folks, that we start to see that we're part of a spectrum here, that this folks being unhoused and then being unfairly evicted and then, you know, all of this that's happening, this is all part of a greater problem with our economic system in this country and with our political system, and lack of representation and, you know, lack of leaders really responding to what the people need and what the people are asking for, and instead, you know, indulging their own self-interests and self-interests of those who already have way more than enough. And I think that, you know, one of the big issues is that folks don't realize what unhoused people face. Housed people don't realize what unhoused people face. I give volunteer orientations and I speak to folks out in the community all the time. And, you know, when I say, I think the bathroom example is huge. When I say, do you know that if you are caught urinating or defecating in public 3 times, you have to register as a sex offender? And that, I mean, people go, What are you talking about? What in the world? You know, people aren't aware of these things. They don't know that one time we're saying, you know, if you don't have money, you're not allowed to be able to use a restroom. And then, so that means your next option is to be on the street, which then can lead to very serious consequences. And I think, you know, this work around the Homeless Bill of Rights, we're really coming at it very thoughtfully and using it as an educational opportunity to really highlight, this is what people are facing. Folks really don't know the extent of the violation of civil rights that unhoused people are facing. So my hope is that it's really going to bring people together and have more understanding, and for folks to really feel that outrage that we feel in the community that's, you know, dealing with this day in and day out.
So do you think that the people that are housed would take a grasp of this, because you are housed?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's difficult, right? I mean, our system thrives on division, and it thrives on pitting classes against each other and people of color against each other. And I think that the more that we can highlight the similarities, the more that we can highlight where we are all being negatively impacted, the more you're going to open people's minds to hearing and to understanding just how incredibly unjust our system is. So I would hope very much that housed folks, I think by and large, I believe in the goodness of people. I have the experience, like I said, time and again, of kind of highlighting some of the issues that are facing the unhoused community and hearing housed people say, oh my gosh, I had no idea. What can I do? That is my hope, is that we're going to see more and more of that happening.
What is your part in constructing the Homeless Bill of Rights in Oregon? What do you participate in? What's your forte? What's your profession?
Oh, my forte. Well, I mean, I kind of, my main areas that I'm involved are sort of coordinating the work, helping support the subcommittees in getting their meetings set up and recruiting more folks to help out with the work. I specifically am part of the education subcommittee, so we're going to be doing a Know Your Rights workshop here in a couple weeks. Folks folks can really understand what are their rights now, and then start to really be thinking about, okay, these are my rights now. What other protections need to be in place to uphold these rights, or what are new issues that have come up that need to be addressed? So sort of educating our community and then the community at large. And also I participate on the street outreach committee, which is looking towards really getting, you know, the most important thing, which is the voice of the unhoused community, hearing from them, what are the issues that are facing them? What are the needs out there? What do they feel is most important to include in a bill like this? So those are kind of my main areas that I work in. But I think all of us are getting really good training in what it means to be a lobbyist, sort of, in a way, right? We're all learning, how do we talk about this stuff? How do we think about it in legal terms? Not just what it means for me everyday life, but how do we then switch the way we talk about it so that it can go into legislature. I mean, that's a huge shift in thinking. So I'm excited to learn more about that.
Yeah. And as this campaign goes on, meetings are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I think that would be problematic because more and more people that's not housed are having input, or would you like to see more unhoused people being more involved?
I think the more folks from the community, the more unhoused people that can be a part of this work, the better. I mean, that's what this is all about. I mean, I believe very much that community organizing is only as valuable as the folks that are impacted by the issues are participating in it, right? I mean, I have my ideas and my thoughts about what would be helpful in a homeless bill of rights, but I've never lived on the streets. It's not for me to say. You know, that's why I say I come to this as an ally, and I want to support that work, and I want to have, you know, do more and more outreach and get more and more people involved. I think the meetings being big is great because it's really good to know that we have support. And it's great that there's interest from housed folks, because let's face it, we need housed folks as allies, right? It's not going to go anywhere if we can't get people who have housing and have some amount of influence, either in their pocketbooks or in the people they know, to support this bill to get it through the legislature eventually. So I think it's wonderful there's that interest. But I think always, and I know that this is on the mind of the core member groups, Right to Survive, Street Roots, Sisters of the Road, Dignity Village, Right to Dream 2, always the voices that need to be heard more than anyone else's are that of the unhoused community.
Do you feel that the politicians would take grasp of this and let it be, or do you feel some resistance?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are definitely some state representatives that will be in our corner, will be supportive of this. You know, my biggest concern is we've got some really awful ordinances on the books here in Portland, the sit-lie law, the anti-camping ordinance. So I'm interested to see what the attorneys come up with, and maybe, what other folks that are part of crafting bills on a regular basis would say about how do we get around that? Because, you know, that's something that folks talk about a lot. They're, you know, ticketed and harassed, and the police use those ordinances to support that. So that, I fear, and we've not been very successful, obviously, in appealing or repealing those ordinances. So that's of concern, but I think there's definitely support out there. We know of a couple of state representatives already who've said they are behind us and behind this work. So that's incredibly exciting from the get-go, having that.
One last question. Do you feel like George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, all of them that wrote the Constitution of the Bill of Rights?
Oh my gosh, if only I had outfits as cool as those guys, I would totally feel like them. I mean, it is, I've said exciting several times, but it really is. I mean, it's, I, being a tribal member, have been a part of, you know, tribal meetings where laws have been passed and things like that, where I've gotten to vote, and that's really exciting, you know, to see that process. This, for me, feels even more so because it's just, I see it as a move towards really, like, changing, not just here in Oregon, but across the country, the way people see the issues of poverty and houselessness and the connection that people have to the work that's being done. I mean, just the way that in the time we have been working on this, which has just been, what, 3 or 4 months now, you know, we've heard folks in Massachusetts are interested in doing something, folks in Montana, in New York and Pennsylvania, you know, all across the country. And I feel really inspired, and I can't imagine what it would have been like to be part of the National Congress that created the U.S. Constitution, but I feel like we're definitely making history, that's for sure.
Thank you much, Lindsay, and we wish much success and hope this bill passes soon.
Everything is gonna be alright someday.
We would like to thank all our guests for their insight and dedication in creating a Houseless Bill of Rights for Oregon. Please continue to tune in to Right to Survive Radio for the rest of this invaluable 3-part series. If you are interested in becoming involved, please contact Right to Survive at 503-839-9992 or drop by Sisters of the Road on the corner of Northwest 6th and Davis. Right to Survive Radio airs the second Wednesday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. here on KBOO. Check us out on Facebook or view our blog at www.write2survive@wordpress.com or email us at writetosurvive.gmail.com. You can always come to our meetings held every Thursday at Sisters of the Road from 5 to 7 p.m., and food is provided.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7 o'clock.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present the live broadcast for the 26th annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music, Arts, and Food Festival. This 3-day celebration kicks off Friday, June 22nd, with the Good in the Hood Parade and Festival continuing Saturday, June 23rd, and ending Sunday evening, June 24th. Good in the Hood is back at King School Park at Northeast Grand Avenue. Tune into KBOO starting Saturday afternoon on June 23rd for the live broadcast. More information about Good in the Hood can be found on the KBOO.fm website on the home page.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Iran Form, U.S.